Hey, everyone, and welcome to episode number 7 of Couch Confidentials, brought to you by MarTech Therapy. I'm your host, Matthew Niederberger, and I'm excited about having our guest with us today. Today's guest is Tejas Manohar. He's the co-founder of HiTouch. After being one of the first 10 engineers at Segment, Tejas took his deep understanding of customer data platforms and together with co-founders Josh Curl and Kashish Gupta, set out to fundamentally change how companies think about data activation. Known for their provocative Friends Don't Let Friends Buy CDP campaign and their pioneering proposable approach, HiTouch has grown from an industry challenger to a recognized leader, recently launching major innovations like AI decisioning and a solution for retail media networks. So welcome to the show, Tejas, and it's glad to finally have you in my podcast and talk to you one-on-one.
Thank you, Matthew. I really appreciate it, and I'm excited to be on the show as well.
Yeah. Hey, listen. You went from being one of Segment's first engineers to challenging the entire CDP category. What was the moment you realized the traditional CDP model needed disruption?
Yeah, great question. So first and foremost, I was a happy Segment customer before joining Segment. I still remember how I got the job. I sent a cold email to the CTO, one of the founders of Segment, Calvin, who's one of the nicest people on the planet, still friends with him today. And I mentioned how I love the product and I wanted to work there and I just wanted the chance to interview. And that's how it all started. And Segment has a lot of happy customers. It's a great platform today. When I joined, the initial product was the connections, what's called the connections product today. Yeah. Previously, it was just called Segment. And it's a tag management solution basically on steroids. You can put their libraries like Analytics.js or Analytics.iOS in your website or your mobile app, and you can track the actions customers are taking really easily. So one line of code, you can say, user clicked a button, user opened the pricing page, user signed up, et cetera. And Segment will make it easy to forward all of that data into Google Analytics, Mixpanel, Amplitude, HubSpot, yeah, the data warehouse, and so forth. Now, that product's phenomenal. I think it's still a, you know, one of the standard products in the market. There's more competitors today, right? HiTouch has an events product. There's Rudderstack. It feels like everyone has an event collection product, but I think it really set the standard in a way. Segment later transitioned to be a CDP company as that category was taking off and became one of the leaders there. And CDP really meant marketing teams didn't want to just have events forwarded about what their customers are doing to a lot of places. They wanted a data platform to operate it, right? They wanted a place to build their audiences, to understand who a customer is and everything about them, to build journeys that execute across emails and ads and all these places. What I saw was that CDP was a great vision that every marketing team resonated with, from small companies to large companies. You know, marketers have never really felt like they had a data platform for them and they had access to all the data themselves. At the same time, at large companies, you know, as we got bigger at Segment, you know, we eventually sold the company to Twilio for almost $3.5 billion. We got bigger, we started to go after enterprise companies. We try to close the Nikes of the world, the Procter & Gambles, and those types of companies, some of which are Segment customers today. And one just consistent pattern I noticed was the vision of CDP was great, but it was really, really hard to help companies get all their data into the CDP,
yeah,
right? Doing that at an enterprise scale, it's not just analytics events that's important. There's offline data, there's models your data science team is building. And even just from online, you have so many different apps and websites and stuff that this requires a huge IT initiative. And the only technology I saw getting that kind of IT initiative to get all the data in a company in one place were these data warehouses. So Snowflake, Databricks, Google BigQuery, Amazon Redshift. You know, I thought CDPs were growing fast. These technologies were growing crazy fast and continue to across the enterprise.
Yeah.
And that's where I got the idea of, hey, how do we give marketers a platform that sits directly on top of these data warehouses and allows them to do the first tier of CDP needs, right? Identity resolution, audience building, activating to different channels, journeys, but later on, things like AI, which we'll kind of get into today.
Yeah, no, definitely. And you know, that's the reason I really wanted to connect with you is I was really intrigued by this new product you launched, AI Decisioning. But before we get there, as I just started MarTech Therapy, I moved into an incorporated and I'm a one-man army, but you need to do your daily work with two co-founders. You work together with Josh and Kashish. And I'm just curious, I mean, how has the growth of HiTouch these last 2 years, because you guys have grown phenomenally, How has it influenced your relationship among the three of you?
Yeah, great question. A lot of founders ask me about this. Kashish, Josh, and I have been good friends for 6 to 8 years now. So I've known Josh for almost 8 years.
Long before Hightouch,
Kashish for 6 years. It's been a while, right? And we only started working on the companies together about 5.5 years ago. I actually met Josh through working together at Segment. I knew we worked together well from a professional sense there, but we also kind of became personal friends. And I met Kashish through Josh. So friendship was really there from the beginning. And I think that friendship that we've had, that close friendship from being friends, from being roommates for many years, from working tons at our previous jobs and working 12 hours together in the early days of the company and being in the same room all day in COVID, has really been the bedrock of all the stressful situations we've been through while starting the company, scaling people, learning how to manage, having to let go of people, conflicts around product direction, you name it. All that stuff happens when you start a company, but I think having a strong friendship from the beginning has been really helpful for us.
Yeah, and I mean, besides the horrors of that COVID brought globally, being stuck in a small room with the three of you, I think on the one hand it could have been very beneficial for a Hightouch. All you had to do was work, but on the other hand,
from the truth.
Yeah. But I can imagine how sometimes, how small these apartments in San Francisco are. So coming back to AI decisioning, I mean, you've taken Hightouch a long way. You guys started as a reverse ETL solution. Then events came afterwards, which I found an interesting development as well. But then, it's 2005, AI decisioning. I mean, what can you tell us about it? I've done my research, but I'd love to hear kind of what the sales pitch is here.
Yeah, sounds good. Before we get into all the technology and where it's going and the vision, let's just talk about what this is. AI decisioning is a new technology, and it's nascent. Not a lot of people know about it, and less than 100 companies are using concepts like AI decisioning in their marketing today. So what is it? Basically, what AI decisioning is it is an AI that solves the end-to-end problem of how marketers make decisions of how to engage their customers. What do I mean by that? Today marketers have to make a ton of decisions. They have to decide whether they should email a customer. And when I say email, I mean message in any way, push notification, something in-app, email, advertise, whether they should reach out to a customer, when they should reach out to a customer, should it be after they do a certain event, should it be at a certain time of day, what of the 100 content I have in my ESP should I send a customer, what should that be informed by? Even besides content variations, what's the goal I should be pushing my customers towards, right? Is this customer interested in new product categories, or should I get them to buy more of the same thing, or should I get them to download my mobile app, which is good for their long-term LTV?
Yeah.
It's a hard problem. And you, regardless of whether you think about it that way, you're making so many decisions as a marketer and as a marketing team and as a marketing leader. And those decisions are based on a number of things, right? One is gut feeling, which actually is, it sounds funny to say it that way. I'm not trying to say it in a diminishing way at all. It's really real, and it's actually very valuable, and we'll talk about that in a bit.
Experience counts for something, yeah.
Right. Certain things are, your customer, if you're a good marketer to some extent, right? Second is what's worked historically. Right? What does the data say? What kind of campaigns performed the best? Now, this one's interesting because people often have ideas of like general themes of what's working. But unless you're running your marketing program very meticulously and doing A/B testing and experimentation and all that kind of stuff, it's actually really difficult to know what's working at a more micro level. Yeah. And we'll get into how AI decisioning helps there in a second. And then three is sometimes you're incorporating outputs from your data science team or machine learning folks at the company, stuff like predictive models. These customer cohort of a million people has a 70% chance of churning, or product recommendations. Customers who bought XYZ products often like ABC products, but these ML models tell you very answer very pointed questions and don't really answer the global problem that you have as a marketer, which is, how should I engage my customers, right? Think about it. 10 customers could have a 70% chance of churning for 10 different reasons, and they could respond to 10 different marketing messages best. On product recommendations, you can know that in general, customers who buy product X like product Y, but how is that being informed by the last 10 push notifications you sent them about product Y or Z? Or does timing influence that of the marketing you're sending right now, right? There's so many different variations when you think about the whole customer lifecycle.
And a lot of touch points by the sound of it. You're taking exactly. it into account so much more than just the results of the last campaign in history. Yeah,
exactly. It's so much more than just product history and transactions or the results of the last campaign. If you want to really optimize the problem of decisioning and making marketing decisions, you have to think super holistically and you need to have a lot of data. So how does AI decisioning work?
That goes way beyond gut feeling.
Exactly. That goes way beyond gut feeling. So how does that work? How is that possible? Well, what we do is we're giving marketers a platform, right? AI decisioning is a platform, just like an audience builder in a product like iTouch or Braze or Salesforce or like a journey builder in one of those tools. AI decisioning is a new platform for marketers. And it's a very powerful engine where the first thing they can do is set up their goals. You know, AI and machine learning can't work without clear guidance of what it's trying to optimize towards. So here is a step where marketers get to put in things like, I'm really trying to drive cross-sells at my company. Even though cross-sells hasn't been our most successful campaign over the last couple of years, we have done analysis to say that that is the highest value thing we can drive customers towards for us as a company. If our customers want to be driven towards that, we should drive them towards it. Because if someone engages in a second product category, that's worth twice as much as a purchase.
And just to kind of interrupt there, you mentioned analysis. Is that what AI decisioning is doing? Is they're recommending saying, hey, you need to do a cross-sell campaign?
Yeah, great question. So AI decisioning does an element of that. But honestly, we're not replacing in-house data science teams, in-house data analysis work, in-house marketing strategy that your team is setting. What we're helping you do is once you have a goal like that, so you know you want to cross-sells are worth, you know, this much to your business. Downloading a mobile app is also an important goal. Getting people to activate offers is something I'm trying to drive my customers towards.
Yeah.
We look at all of that and we look at all the content you have in Braze and Salesforce and those different tools that can help get people to take those actions. And we figure out what should you be sending to each customer, if anything, as well as when and on what channel to drive them towards the highest overall LTV. So for example, you know, cross-sells can be the most important thing, but if half your customers don't care about your other product categories or aren't responding well, you should pivot your marketing for those customers to something else, like downloading their mobile app, and maybe they'll care about cross-sells later. That's just really hard decisioning to do today in the paradigms we have, where we're building these linear journeys or these, you know, isolated audiences of customers. When each customer is really different and we should be building a journey for each of them based on everything we know about them.
Yeah.
And that's what AI decisioning is really doing. Using reinforcement learning is the main technology that we use for this.
So when you say reinforcement learning, again, try not to sound naive, but from a business perspective, does that mean that if I launch a campaign and I set the goals, I set the audience, et cetera, and the content, does that mean that AI decisioning will kind of self-correct? Is that what you mean with reinforcement learning? It'll try to find the most optimal path on an individual user level?
Yeah, that's exactly it. So we're both trying to find the most optimal path on an individual user level and get smarter over time. So learn based on how your users are, again, not just their historical product purchases, but learn based on how your users are engaging or not engaging or responding to your marketing and to your communications with them.
Yeah.
So that's one. But then we're also learning across all your users. So yes, we learn on individual user level, but we also look at everything that makes that user what they are. We're generating tons of features on them from all your data, slicing and dicing it in different ways to feed our machine learning models. And we are learning across users as well.
Yeah. So the AI decision is also generating its own data to take into account on future campaigns. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I've noticed that, again, as an individual user with something like ChatGPT, that if I ask him, hey, what do you know about me? It's storing that data so it can make sure that the content or the results that it delivers is tailored to my preferences. And it's interesting to hear that that's kind of the same case with AI decisioning. It's taking every time it interacts with a specific user, the results of that or the steps taken and the results are then being pushed back in so that it can be reused for reinforcement learning for the next time. That's pretty amazing. I mean, I know this is kind of a luring a kind of a sales response out of it, but from one CDP fan to the other, what are the kind of results you're seeing, the responses? And I know that you have a great sales team. They're doing a massive amount of work. but just on the down low, are the results promising?
Yeah. So thanks for complimenting our sales team.
I've seen a few past clients that I did segment implementations with. I went back to the website and I see that most of them have been replaced by High Touch. So,
oh, wow. Yeah, that is one of the trends that's happening. Yeah. Yes, we're seeing pretty promising results in the industry. We are working with fast growing, up and coming brands like Whoop. If you know the fitness brand product, Whoop, the fitness band.
They still need to enter the Dutch market, I think, here in the Netherlands.
Okay, got it. Yeah, US-based company. But, we work directly with their lifecycle marketing and CRM team and their VP of CRM marketing, Aoife. And she's a huge advocate for the Iterable platform, which you probably know about. And, one thing that she pointed out is that not just the lift, so they're seeing 10% plus lift on some of their key cross-sell initiatives in terms of incremental cross-sell, so in terms of actual sales. But what's more interesting than that is that, we talked earlier about how AI decisioning is actually creating more data.
Yeah.
It's running all these experiments automatically for you through reinforcement learning. So today, if you need to answer a question as a marketer, like, do customers who are younger respond better to content in the morning versus the evening? And does that change based on the type of content we're sending them?
Yeah.
That's a really hard question to answer. You probably haven't run an experiment to answer that question. AI decisioning has. It's continuously running literally millions of experiments through the reinforcement learning technology and surfacing those insights to marketers in our UI that can help them not just make decisions about how they want to change their CRM marketing content and strategy, but can influence the whole marketing strategy. Like, we've seen CMOs of companies really interested in those learnings, and they're taking it to other things like billboards and brand campaigns and just the internal understanding of a customer. Yeah. And something that Aoife said that really stucks out to me, and I'll quote it in this case, but it was basically something to the extent of they saw more learnings in 6 weeks of using AI decisioning than in the previous 12 months of experimentation as a team. And they do a heck of a lot of experimentation.
And I would almost say that that's a given when you're using technology. I mean, I've done A/B testing in the past, and the amount of effort that goes into planning, working out an hypothesis, generating the content, programming these A/B testing tools, putting it live, preferably not on a Friday, sometimes working on a Saturday to fix something that you've seen go wrong that needs to be correcting, and only to find out a week later that your results are maybe getting a 0.01% uplift because your hypothesis was all wrong. It's great to hear about how High Touch is now using that AI as a part of the engine, I guess, around it. So the question I wanted to ask...
And it works on the weekends too.
And it works on the weekends. Yeah, exactly.
I'm half kidding, but
and they're not. It's not unionized either. No.
You said that.
It's a Dutch thing. Dutch are proud around unions. But
I get fired if I say that in the U.S.
I won't put you in that spot. But you did mention billboards and other channels. The question I have is, what does it take to kind of set up a campaign around AI decisioning? On the website, I read about four steps. You have the flow, as you mentioned it. You have your goals, your content, your audience, and something called guardrails that I like to get into. But I'm thinking about the output. Is this something that you could put into emails, into your set top boxes? Difficult word. I used to work for a TV provider, but to get advertising on these digital television OSs, et cetera, because that's also what Hightouch has been dabbling in. Is it?
Yeah.
Is it? Can it deliver on any platform?
Great question. So we believe MarTech's an ecosystem game. We're not the ESP. We're not an ad channel. We're not your DXP. We integrate with those systems. Yeah. Luckily, as you know, we started Hightouch as a CDP, as a composable CDP. We already integrate with almost 300 different marketing channels and ad channels, et cetera. But yeah, we have those native integrations that while you don't have to buy our CDP product to use AI decisioning, it's completely independent. We have companies using AI decisioning on top of Salesforce's CDP or treasury data or systems.
Yeah.
We do use all those integrations from a technology perspective so that we have a lot of integrations in our AI decisioning product now. And so basically the way you think about it is you go into AI decisioning and that's the hub for you as a marketer to input your initiatives. So cross sells, downloading the mobile app, loyalty activation of offers. Those are things I'm trying to drive to as a marketer. You also input all the actions that you're willing to take on customers. You don't build those emails out in Hightouch. You continue building them in your ESP like Adobe or Salesforce or a DAM system that you're using like AEM. And then you just enable them through like dropdowns in Hightouch, select the ones that are relevant to different initiatives.
Yeah.
If you want to get fancy, you can let AI generate variables to put into those emails too, like a discount offer between 0 and 20% or
to experiment with different levels of discounts.
Or to experiment between five different CTAs. Or you could just send the email as is, right?
It could be simple too.
And then from that point onwards, you can get, you know, with some guardrails in place, you can get AI decisioning clocking and experimenting across your customer base and automatically just triggering sends, right, in tools like Braze or Salesforce or Iterable and firing off these messages to different customers and learning from that and optimizing your overall program so that each customer is really getting what's most relevant to them. But I would say the most important part past just optimizing the performance of these campaigns, which we've seen great lifts on, you know, above 10% for Whoop, as well as we have a 40% stat on a pretty important cross-sell initiative for a specialty retailer in the U.S. It's actually a Fortune 500 company. And besides performance, one of the most valuable things we hear from everyone is the insights, right? Actually being able to go into the UI and see what different cohorts of customers are responding well to what different types of marketing tactics, content, et cetera. Because the biggest lift you're going to get is from changing your marketing strategy and your content strategy based on those insights, even more than orchestration a lot of times. So that's super valuable. And honestly, what we see is that it kind of simplifies. A lot of times people think this new product is going to make my workflow of getting a campaign out more complicated and have more steps. We've actually seen to some extent it's simplified it. What I see in a lot of marketing teams, especially in larger companies, is that they're always working so hard to hit the deadlines, right? To get a campaign out, it requires 3 to 4 people on average. It's often a marketing leader involved in the strategy.
Exactly.
There's some sort of CRM or lifecycle marketer involved at an IC level. There's a marketing ops person who configures the campaign. There's a data analyst who pulls the segments. There's someone else who helps you analyze the results.
Yeah,
there's all these
incredible efforts. Yeah.
Yeah. There's all these people involved that are highly skilled, highly intelligent people. You know, that data analyst, the data scientist can be go building really interesting propensity model. They can go figuring out what's the value of one purchase of a product versus another for a long-term LTV. They can be figuring out some pretty interesting stuff, but instead they have to build audience segments. And with AI decisioning, marketers can really just focus on the content and the actions they're trying to drive towards and the strategy. And then AI can figure out all the nuances of who to send it to and get smarter over time and surface those insights back to everyone from the data analyst to the marketing team to the CMO of the company.
I mean, AI is... So this is a question that I think about quite often. And we just read about Mark Zuckerberg releasing another 5% of the workforce, mid-level coders. Is it going to be kind of a double-edged sword for a lot of these companies using AI decisioning? This is just taking a little tangent here. Personally, my belief is that it's going to help productivity. So I don't think there's necessarily a reason to fire people. It's just going to help improve their productivity. And like based on the results that you shared so far, also the performance that they're reaching. So will their targets get higher? Will the pressure still be there? Is that, I know it's completely off topic of the product, but I'm just kind of thinking about the impact it might have.
Really great question. Yeah, it's interesting. It's hard to think about how these things play out, but we can all think about them for fun and play a guessing game,
definitely.
And then we'll see what happens. It is fun. I think that AI decisioning honestly doesn't pose much threat to the labor force, right? Yeah. I don't think it's going to be shrinking marketing teams. If you look at what marketers are spending a lot of time on and where they can add value to the organization, they're spending time on a lot of things, and there's a lot of places they can add value to the organization. And they aren't necessarily always attached to some of these tasks like audience building or journey building, and they're always interested in tools that can help them do those things better, is what I've seen. And that marketing ops person, that marketing tech person who's configuring each campaign can now, with something like AI decisioning, go explore how technology can help move their business forward, right? Is it a Gen AI technology that can help them generate more variants and move faster than dependency on their brand agency? Is it something like, I know there's a product, Wunderkind, that I've been looking at recently, you know, hearing from customers, that's pretty cool. It brings in an IP graph to find email addresses of visitors on your website, and then helps you outbound email those people in Salesforce Marketing Cloud. So you can email people, anonymous visitors, about an abandoned cart. People are seeing pretty good lift from that stuff. So totally irrelevant to AI decisioning, but the idea is that marketing ops, marketing tech person can go think about how to use technology to move the business forward instead of configuring each one-off campaign in Salesforce every day.
Yeah.
So I think it really is going to make these teams more productive, make them more powerful, turn every marketer into a data scientist in a way. And I hope that it does actually, increase the goals a little bit over time, because the lifts we're seeing are pretty impressive.
So. No, absolutely. And it does remind me of a quote that I read in the Customer 360 book. And there's a quote in there saying, AI is not going to be, AI is not the threat for the workforce. It's the human with AI skills who is going to replace the human without AI skills. So people who are going to be using AI decisioning are going to have an edge on the workforce working with this new cutting edge technology.
I think I saw that very similar quote. Maybe it was on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And that really resonates with me. I think the marketers and any profession who embraces AI and figures out what are the ways it can be used by me and my team to drive the business forward and educates the team, et cetera, are going to be the ones that become the leaders of marketing tomorrow. We've seen this when new channels come about, right? In the retail world, direct to consumer, e-commerce, loyalty, mobile. The marketing leaders that saw those things as the rising tides of the market and jumped on it and realized that those bets are going to change the course of my business. Which
this also means you're right, Tejas. You know that.
Composable.
Exactly.
To an extent. And are the ones that are getting promoted and being speaking at conferences and getting job offers in their inbox. To be honest, right, CMOs that purely focused on brand and messaging and positioning are going a little bit out of style, right? The ones that didn't expand their repertoire to more than that, right? That's still very, 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 very important.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going away with AI anytime soon.
No, definitely. Those type CMOs will still be around for another 10 years at least. Yeah.
I see it the way that you mentioned.
Yeah. Hey, listen, we've talked a lot about the product now. I'm curious kind of what's driving everything. The documentation mentioned Snowflake Cortex. I work in MarTech. I've done a little bit dabbling with data engineering, but to be able to explain in layman's terms why do you need to use something like Snowflake Cortex, or just even take one step back, what is Snowflake Cortex? Can you kind of dabble about that or kind of shed some light on what that is exactly?
Yeah, for sure. So what do we use? What is Snowflake Cortex and what do we use it for in our product? First and foremost, I will say this is an optional part of our product. It's for Snowflake customers and for companies on other data platforms. We've kind of built similar technologies for those as well, with Databricks and Google, etc. But what is it? Because it's a new term. A lot of people haven't heard of it. Even I hadn't heard of it until a year ago. I think that's maybe when they announced it. it is basically a native version of some of the LLM type capabilities you can see in like ChatGPT, directly in the Snowflake platform. So if you have unstructured data like text, like email copy in Snowflake, you can use Cortex to run LLM prompts on that data. And basically what we're using it for is actually looking at that unstructured data. So one of the things AI Decisioning does is when you connect a channel tool like Braze or Adobe, et cetera, we are basically connecting to that, scraping all the campaigns out of that tool, putting it in your data warehouse, which is the database of the system. You don't have to think about it. And we're using Snowflake Cortex on top for Snowflake customers and other LLMs for other customers to build attributes off of those campaigns. So this campaign has a discount offer. This campaign has this kind of tone. This campaign has these characteristics. And those features that we're building, those characteristics of different campaigns, content, push notifications, creative that we're building and putting in your warehouse are actually used to create even more interesting correlations and insights from an AI decisioning perspective because we're able to make insights on how different customers respond to discount offers. For example, instead of just thinking that email 50 is completely different than email 200, which is true, but there's something similar about them. So those tags are extremely important. And I think LLMs actually have provided technology companies like Hightouch a way to generate those tags off unstructured data in a way that's way easier and way better than anything we've had before.
That's pretty amazing. Listen, I think AI decisioning is like I mentioned before. I'm seeing different companies take different approaches, and I'll have to say this. I mean, Lytics with their XCDP, opening up that the profiles into a data layer for content management systems to use is insightful. But the same around AI decisioning. It's one of these solutions that, you know, 10 years ago when I was using tools like Optimizely to do A/B, I wish it was there because the pace at which you can start generating insights about the effort that you're putting in into optimizing campaigns or at least the customer experience is phenomenal. And I'd like to schedule another call sometimes and actually kind of see it at work. You know, what does it look like? How do you go through the processes and just kind of see the tool at its finest.
Yeah, that would be awesome. That would be lovely. We should get you a demo.
Yeah, definitely. Hey, another article that was released 2 weeks ago around offsite media networks or retail media networks. In the article, it said that, I've been hearing this a lot in the conversations that I've been having. You guys published some research in there saying that, you know, 42% rise in ad spend on retail media networks, according to the eMarketer in a fall or November 2024 report. Did you guys already think about stepping into that, the offsite media network a niche with Hightouch, or, you know, is it feedback from companies? I mean, how do you come up with the idea to jump into that?
Yeah. I can totally see from the outside in how that looks a little random, right? What's Hightouch doing in helping companies create a media network now?
Yeah.
That seems different than a CDP or
absolutely
or anything else. It's different, but it's similar, right? I think our goal is to help, our mission, right, is to help companies use data and use AI to drive growth.
Yeah.
And when you think about growth, one side of growth is how do I get more customers? Another side of growth is how do I get customers to engage my brand at a deeper level? How do I get them to use all my products, you know, buy more from me, come to my site more often? And then another side of growth is just other ways to generate revenue from my customers and from my business. And I think media is becoming a bigger opportunity for not just media companies, but for every company. And retail media is a really good example of that, where you're seeing typical e-commerce companies or retail companies like Best Buy now make significant business lines off selling ads to some of the companies that are selling products at Best
Buy. That's incredible. Yeah.
Right. And I think there's two ways that we see people selling those ads. One is on-site. So when you go to a company's like Best Buy's website and Best Buy itself can show ads to customers on the website. The other way is off-site, which is Best Buy has a lot of data about different customers of Best Buy, and they're always running ads actually to try to get customers to buy more at Best Buy. But they can also run those ads in partnership with some of the companies that sell products on Best Buy, just as an example, like LG or Samsung or Apple, and promote things that those companies want in the advertisement. And they can use all the data they know about their customers, what they're interested in, to influence that. So they're building audiences and syncing those to Facebook.
Yeah.
Best Buy data, just as a hypothetical example. So that's offsite. It's almost working like a media agency, right? But it has this very unique data that no other company has, which is your retail data.
Yeah, it used to be locked up in Google and Facebook, but now the retail websites are offering it in the same way to be able to target their users.
Exactly. And even your in-store purchases can contribute to the data moat that you have as a company to serve as a media platform or a media agency for brands that are selling products, right? Even your offline purchases can help with that. So what we're seeing is that a lot of companies across a lot of industries, particularly retail, are getting into this media business, that third way to make money with marketing. And the first thing they have to ask is, like, how the heck do I do this from a technology perspective? On-site media is a bit tricky. Usually requires multiple solutions. You got to think about where those ads go on your website. Is it connected to your search? All sorts of different things. We do have a role there. We help companies like Bol.com, for example.
Dutch company in the Netherlands.
You would know them really well. Who have billions and billions of revenue. We have a case study with them online. We help them with the decisioning around which ads to show which people, right? Off all the data in their data warehouse. But we have to work with GAM and other systems there. But offsite media is kind of interesting, where what is a brand actually doing to do offsite media? They're really just like building really rich audiences and data sets about their customers. So something like Best Buy's customers, and shipping that off to Facebook ads, Google ads, the Trade Desk, even an email platform maybe to put an ad inside of their email, which is a lot cheaper. And sending ads based on that first party data, which is what something High Touch is already pretty good at. And we have additional products we built around, and we have a lot of insights that are useful for marketers, but with some more things we've added can be really useful for retail media ad specialists. So it's a problem we saw, like, we were just curious people. We kind of saw, like, hey, some of our customers are investing in retail media. That seems like a really big, interesting opportunity. Let's go learn more about it. And once we got into it, we realized there's a lot of overlap between what these companies are doing, what these teams are doing, and what our other teams at the company that we're serving are doing. And that I think there's an opportunity to help both teams out. We're driving revenue and growth from data. Now, there's some things we've had to add, tons of new integrations and new product features, and any proposition like this is a big effort. But there's so much that we've built that's been helpful for it at the same time.
I can imagine that. I mean, once you get started with one customer, it's a learning experience, not only for the customer itself, but also for you guys, for High Touch, in further developing that product. I mean, as you said, you guys were stuck in a room doing product development during COVID period, trying to come up with best idea to move forward with High Touch. But now you guys are also in a position to collect a lot of feedback from your customers and to further develop individual products within High Touch's offerings. It's So kind of to round off slowly, because I know we're kind of reaching the time. You guys have come a long way. For me personally, correct me if I'm wrong, the first time I got in touch with High Touch was around reverse ETL. You guys were doing a lot of reverse ETL work.
We always had the CDP vision, but reverse ETL.
Yeah, exactly. And now you're at AI decisioning, and you're connecting to retail media networks. I mean, I think this is kind of the new era of CDPs that we're entering. And you guys are also carving out a unique space beyond traditional CDP capabilities. I mean, to what point was this always part of the plan?
Yeah, really good question. So I think the plan was that, and still remains, that there are a lot of opportunities that data and AI, I think, can be disruptive to how a business drives growth. Yeah. And the steps, the order, which features we build, all that stays dynamic. And all of that, we keep learning every year. We didn't think we'd put out some products like AI Decisioning or Match Booster in that exact way when we started the company, but did we feel like there was going to be a general opportunity around providing more intelligence to marketing teams on top of this wealth of data that we have now that we're connecting to their Snowflake, their Databricks, their Google BigQuery? Yes, and we decided to figure that out along the way. So I think never say never in terms of the opportunities out there, but we really feel like there is a lot of potential to build a hub for marketing and digital teams for all things data related, and help them really extract insights from that data and use it to inform every part of their marketing strategy. Yeah. So that's kind of the way we're thinking about it, and we'll pursue more opportunities along those lines.
Yeah, and it's a lot of respect to you guys for remaining composable throughout that.
Right, AI
throughout the entire
doesn't
growth.
Need the CDP. Yeah.
No, exactly, and I mean you guys have all the markings, all the products, all the modules to become a package solution, but you guys are remaining composable. So a lot of respect for that. Just to kind of round off the question, and tell me to back off if you say, Matt, you're overstepping a little bit. You guys started with a kind of very provocative marketing. I think one of the most popular articles you guys ever wrote was the Friends Don't Let Friends Buy CDP. But in my eyes, you guys have now become really, you guys established yourself as market leaders. I mean, how has this change kind of matured your company from being kind of seeking the limits of marketing and now shifting to a more market leader, I don't want to say authoritarian, but kind of you guys are becoming an authority within the CDP world.
Yeah, good question. So I think when there's something really provocative that's worth saying, we might still say it, right?
Yeah.
I think no one was really talking about this shift that we're seeing in the market, that we were seeing in the market a few years ago, and now has become more of a norm around CDPs sitting directly on top of a company's data warehouse.
Yeah.
And I think some of that catchy, maybe provocative, maybe childish, depends on who you ask, messaging helped grab the attention of a lot of people online.
Yeah. Oh, it absolutely did. Opened my eyes, at least, in a positive way.
For sure. And I think now we have a lot of customers. We're focused on educating them on new use cases and putting out valuable content on that, like helping them understand how to pursue opportunities like retail media how do you think about ways AI can actually drive impact today that isn't pie in the sky and isn't futuristic. That's the way we look at it. It is practical use cases. We're going to be putting out a lot more content about that. So I think the right content, it's the right message for the right time. If there's something super provocative, we might do in the future. But right now, I think we're really just focused on educating the market. We think there's a few topics that people know they need to pay attention to. They don't need anyone being provocative about it. People want to learn about AI. People want to learn about retail media. People want to learn about composable. But the information out there is not reaching everyone. And there's so much more information that can be written. So that's the way
we absolutely look at it. And I think there are a few companies out there that definitely stole stole the magic a little bit a couple of days ago with the Treasure Data's trade-up program. Kind of, you know, the right time, just with all the market in turmoil at the moment.
Yeah.
I think they played into that very well. And just like you guys played into it as well, by kind of not necessarily kicking people's shins, you did get the attention and you did open it up a lot of eyes. Like I said in the beginning, I was quite naive around composable, drinking from the wrong Kool-Aid, completely convinced that package will be the way of the future. But slowly but surely, it's left my system, and I'm seeing the benefits of composable. Not to sound like a follower here, but I'm very respectful of the work that you guys are doing in the community, and I look forward to seeing HighTouch take a kind of a command position in teaching us more about how to do better with CDPs and how to get more value out of our business using solutions like HighTouch. So thank you very much for that. And thank you a lot for your time today. I know you're a busy man. And I look forward to that demo of AI decisioning and
Let's
what you guys have more in store in 2025.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.